Radio 970 AM KBUL. Good morning. It's 6:05. This is the Morning Bulletin. I'm Tommy B.
Very interesting.
And then a little bit later, I mentioned an interview and a third. we're gonna do our first segment of old time radio today with a local guy, Vince Long. He's actually a technology teacher over at Senior High. You may remember an article a while back that covered his he won the teaching award.
I'm not surprised.
No, great guy. And he's a technology teacher there, won that award. He collects old-time radio programs and actually has a show on Community 7 television. You may have seen it. I think it's Monday night. I'll have to check my notes again.
Wow.
But he's got this old-time radio show, you know, with the radio drama and all that.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. And if that's not enough, he's actually on the board at Community 7.
Wow.
Yeah, he's like chairman of the board or something.
Busy
like that.
Guy.
So we'll have the first segment of that. It's all ahead on the Bulletin. News Radio 970 AM KBUL, ABC News, just a few seconds away.
Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
News Radio 970 AM KBUL and Tommy B with the Morning Bulletin. Very special guest today. I want to introduce a radio program collector. Not a radio collector, a radio program collector. And he teaches technology at Senior High. As a matter of fact, he's chairman of the board of Community 7 Television as well. I want to thank Vince Long for being with us today.
Thank you.
Vince, I first became aware of you. I think I probably saw the show on Community 7 or I read the article in the Gazette probably about the same time. Mm-hmm. And extremely interested in that, and which is why I've made contact with you now. A radio program collector. How did you first get passionate about radio programs, let's say?
Well, when I was a kid, I was flipping through an old encyclopedia one day, and we were living in Hawaii. My dad was in the Navy, and we were in Honolulu. And one day, I'm flipping through an old encyclopedia, and it had plans for a radio. And it just kind of intrigued me. And so my dad said, "Well, that's got tubes in it. That's a little complicated for you. Why don't we look at something a little simpler?" And so he went down and bought me a kit for a crystal radio, and we put that together. And I just couldn't believe that you could trap radio waves and hear the sounds with no battery.
Right.
It was amazing to me. And so that was the initial hook. And I was about fifth or sixth grade at the time. When we moved back to Los Angeles, I was spinning the dial one day and came across some programs on KHJ in Los Angeles, which was a big station out there in the radio's heyday. And they were playing The Shadow, The Green Hornet, and Sherlock Holmes episodes. And I just couldn't believe how vivid the pictures were in these stories, even though there were no pictures. And I'd heard my parents talk about these kinds of programs, but hadn't really heard one.
Right.
And it was every Sunday afternoon I was hooked and listening to these shows. And my dad had given me a reel-to-reel tape recorder at some point in time, and I recorded one of those shows and realized that there was a difference between radio and television. And that is that you could listen to these programs over and over again, and every time you saw different details of the picture because you created the scenes in your mind.
Indeed.
And so from that point on, I was really hooked on hearing these shows and started combing libraries and other places trying to find more shows. And one thing led to another, and I went from maybe a dozen or so programs on tape to somewhere approaching 30,000 programs now.
Wow, 30,000.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a small collector by some people's
no
standards.
Kidding.
There are some people who have fairly large collections.
Wow, so but you've been at it a while then.
Yeah,
I mean, it didn't.
Yeah, I started in the late 60s, early 70s.
And okay, so what, you must store these in a compact form.
Well, initially my collection was all on reel-to-reel tape. And so I've got quite a few reels of tape. And then I transitioned and used cassettes for a while. And then when the MP3 technology came around for computers, I started using the MP3 technology for archiving this thing and for trading with other collectors, and that's the primary means I use now.
Yeah, and I mentioned that has increased the amount of collection in terms of other collectors a great deal over the internet,
right? Yeah.
And well, how did you go about finding internet sources?
Well, in
the chat rooms and
there's a thing on the internet called mailing lists or listservs, and there's thousands of these things, and there's places you can go on the internet to find out about them. And I searched out one that it's like an online discussion through email about old radio, and not old radios, but old radio programs.
Right.
And I signed up with this list right when it first started quite a few years ago, and through the list, you'd meet other people. People would talk about their favorite shows and maybe send a message out, is anybody interested in trading shows? And so you contact them off the list via email, say, what do you have? And you send each other your lists of shows and say, here's the kind of things I'm looking for. And so then you work up a trade. And back in those days, we were trading primarily on cassettes. And I traded with people all over the country and in England. I met a guy in England who works for Associated Press who has a substantial collection of American programs, and we traded quite a few times.
Right. Well, and you have a lot besides just programs, too. Is that, I mean, you archive audio history coming, because you've brought some stuff down, you know, for us to use.
Well, pretty much I'm interested in the spoken word and pretty much anything from the earliest recorded sounds to even talk shows that are on now, things I'll hear on National Public Radio or things on your station, I'll take little clips off that I find interesting and file them away into what I'll call my audio scrapbook. And it's just and that's primarily on cassette tape, where I'll just take these little scraps and just file them away. And every once in a while, I'll say, hey, I think I remember, I've got a clip. And as a teacher and talking with other teachers, someone will talk about something they're doing in their classroom, and I'll say, hey, I think I've got a sound clip that you might find interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, I found when I was teaching, I would do things like that, too. I used a lot of videotape just because I would grab it, you know. That would be very useful, you know, to be able to do that. There's a renewed history passion as well. I mean, there's a renewed interest in history right now.
Right.
In particular.
Well, and that goes with the collecting of the programs. And radio show collectors come in all varieties. There's the people who are just interested in having more shows than everybody else. There's some people who are interested in having the highest audio quality, and they throw out everything else. There's some people who are interested in specific shows, like maybe they just want every episode that was ever broadcast of The Shadow or I Love a Mystery, things like that. There's people who are in our online discussion group. There's people who are PhDs in this topic of radio history, and so they're interested in just specific shows that talk about certain things to do with the evolution of radio as a medium.
Well, we should talk about the evolution of radio a little bit.
Tune in again tomorrow for the evolution of radio with our special guest Vince Long. It's another thrilling episode of When Radio Was. Tomorrow on The Bulletin with News Radio 970 KBUL.
Speaking of The Bulletin, by the way, back the clock, we've got some interesting things on the show today. Besides, I want to mention the second installment of our radio superhero, Vince Long. He was in the paper today, as a matter of fact. Right there on the first page of the local city-state section, talking about wanting to put together a 12-step program because of AT&T's internet problem. Their cable modems got pulled. Excite.
Wow.
At home is going down, and AT&T scrambling to find a replacement for that. But I'm thinking maybe Vince must have been on Excite at home through AT&T cable modem, because he's talking about putting a 12-step program together for having been pulled away from the internet.
Whoa.
Yeah, anyway, his picture's on the front page there of, the local section. So we're going to have our second installment of the interview with Vince Long. News Radio 970 AM KBUL, 8:58 and a half. We're just 1.5 minutes from the top of the hour. ABC News, of course, on the way in our second installment, radio superhero Vince Long. He's the technology teacher at Senior High. He's also, chairman of the board, Community 7, and an old-time radio program collector. I need to point out that's old-time radio program collector, not radio collector. He jokes all the time, you know.
Andy's in the newspaper today.
Andy's in the newspaper today. Woo-hoo! Down on the internet there. 12-step program. Vince Long, he's on our way with the second installment in our big old radio interview there.
That's right.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from the planet Krypton, who came to Earth with amazing physical powers far beyond those of mortal men. And who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, wages a never-ending battle for truth and justice. Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Superman DC comic magazines.
News Radio 970 AM KBUL, the Morning Bulletin. 9:08 now, 8 minutes after 9. He's a radio program collector, a technology teacher at Senior High here in Billings, and chairman of the board at Community 7. His name is Vince Long, and here's our second installment of my interview with Vince, the evolution of old-time radio. News Radio 970 AM KBUL, Tommy B in the Morning Bulletin with my guest, Vince Long. Thanks for being here again, Vince. And I want to thank you, by the way, for bringing the stuff down that we've been using here on the air. Great stuff. Right before the break, we were talking a little bit about the history of radio and that. What is back in the days of early radio, I know we've talked before this interview about radio becoming an emerging medium. Mm-hmm. All right. News gathering before that, newspapers, right?
Right. Print medium had complete control over the news. And if we look back into very early radio, back into Marconi's days, Marconi was sending Morse code, and it was all dots and dashes, and they were using large spark transmitters, and we didn't have voice transmissions until about 1906. And then the networks didn't get off the ground until 1926, 1927, so we had about 20 years of pre-network time from the first time we could broadcast a voice until the networks really got going. And during that time, radio was very experimental. Anybody who wanted to put up a transmitter and transmit could pretty much do it. The feds finally got involved and said, wait a minute, everybody's stepping on everybody else's frequencies, so we need to regulate this. So the feds got involved, and then newspapers were setting up their own radio stations.
Oh, really?
Department stores set up their own radio station. Car dealerships set up their own radio stations in order to sell.
They're doing that again
product.
Now.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, I mean, national parks and some of the feds actually got after that first, the little weather radios and the Disney, you know, turning your radio on to get the tour through the park and whatnot. And yeah. Now they're doing it as tourist attractions and, you know, shopping information. And
that's right.
You name it, you can do it. But when did the feds get involved?
It was back in the teens when they first started getting involved, because people were...
Before the networks were really...
Oh, sure, yeah. They were... The first licensed station is said to be KDKA, which is in Pittsburgh, and they're still on the air. It's an AM station there. And they were the first licensed station, so they say that they're the first station. They weren't really the first station, but the first licensed station.
Yeah.
And they had... and they broadcast things like... the returns from the presidential election and all that. And the feds really got involved to control who was on what frequency so that people weren't broadcasting on top of each other. That was one reason. The other reason the feds got involved is the public who were listening at the time were complaining about the early commercials. There were things like for fortune tellers and products of questionable merit and all that. And so the feds came in and threatened the industry and said you either need to regulate yourselves or we're going to come in and do something about this. And that's where the National Association of Broadcasters came from.
Really?
Was a way to keep the feds out, say, hey, we'll do it ourselves if you you know, keeping your hands
off. And they're still fighting. You know?
Yeah,
the NAB and the FCC are they're at it all the time.
That's right. 70 years of battle.
Yeah, and well, and so are the censors, as a matter of fact, or I shouldn't say the censors, but the, you know, the opposition, as it were, to the hucksters.
That's right. And what we saw during that first 20 years of radio development is it was really finding its way. The idea that you could produce a music program and insert commercials, you know, that model had to be built. The idea of doing dramatic or comedy shows and selling commercial time, that whole model was very new. It hadn't, there had been no technology to do that before. So once that was really put in place, the news piece came right along with that. And what they would do, the early stations would read the newspaper. They go down the corner, buy the paper, and then read the headlines, and that was their news. CBS subscribed to the wire services and would do a rip and read, and this started a huge battle between the newspapers and the radios that waged for quite a few years during the 1930s, where the newspapers finally told the wire services, if you sell your content to radio, then we will not subscribe, we'll go and set up our own news collection agencies. So radio was cut off. And this is right after the networks were started. And so Paley, who headed CBS, said, hey, we've got to have news. And they set up CBS News and all the networks. And NBC News was then created. ABC didn't exist at the time. And that's where these news services for the networks first started, was because they were cut off from the...
Fascinating.
From the what the print media had done. And this battle went on for quite a while. And then the print media finally realized that they had to get along with radio, because radio started reporting things on the scene. And the newspaper take quite a few hours to hit the street. So they came up with finally an agreement that, okay, we'll share our news sources, the wire services, but radio stations cannot broadcast breaking events until the newspapers hit the streets. And a lot of stations didn't go along
with
it.
For real?
Yeah, and that some stations tried to go along with it, and some stations just said, you know, we can't stand this. And when a couple things happened. The crash of the Hindenburg in 1937, which was not broadcast live. It was Herb Morrison and his engineer were at Lakehurst, New Jersey, testing out some new recording equipment, and just happened to be there when this crash occurred.
Uh-huh.
And so the recording was then played on the network, NBC, and then it was played all over the nation, and it was here was a reporter live on the scene, and the public was just captivated by that. And so radio saw that this was something that was so unique that they could do, that they just said the heck with the newspapers and went ahead and continued live news coverage. And once World War II started, there was no question that radio had found its place.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fascinating. And what were the first entertainment programs then?
Well, there were first programs were whoever owned the station to get up and sing or play the violin. This was fairly primitive. The major source of entertainment in those days was either motion pictures, which were still silent. I'm speaking now of the 1920s, when radio really started selling quite a few receivers. But vaudeville was the form of entertainment,
right?
And vaudeville, they thought, well, we'll get vaudeville stars to come on and do radio. Vaudeville stars didn't like that. Vaudeville star could take their act, which was usually 8 minutes long, and use that act for an entire career.
Right.
They go on the air and use it once, and the whole nation's heard it, and now they need a new act.
Right.
So Ed Wynn was the first vaudeville star, big national superstar, to make the transition to radio and said, okay, I'll give it a try. And once he did it, in fact, he did it like we're doing this interview. We're doing it in a studio, and it's very quiet. And he realized his comedy didn't work in front of a microphone. And he demanded that an audience be brought in that he could interact with. And so he became the first big radio star to make the jump from vaudeville, and then others followed, such as Eddie Cantor and Jack Benny and Fred Allen and many others that got their start mostly in the early 30s. But the first big radio hit was the Amos and Andy program, which started in 1927, and it went national, I think, in 29. And it ran on radio until the mid-50s.
It did it, really? Mm-hmm. That long? And now that would have been back. Fibber McGee must have been, right?
Fibber McGee. That was Jim and Marion Jordan, also a vaudeville act who went into radio in the 1930s.
Yeah, and Jack Benny.
And Jack Benny. And Bob Hope. It was, you know, vaudeville and
right.
Vaudeville star.
Milton Berle?
Milton Berle came later in the 1940s. It was after World War II. He had his own show, and it was really a flop. And it was such a flop. He said he just couldn't figure out why. And I have some of his shows in my collection, and they're okay. But they're missing something. And so he said, gee, I can't make this work, so maybe I'll try that new medium, TV. And, of course, he became the first huge TV star.
Sure, the father of TV.
Yeah.
That's how we know Milt.
Yeah, Uncle Milty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the dress. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. It had to come up quite a bit later. Mm-hmm. Well, what about the dramatic shows, though? I mean, as far as, you know, the Lone Ranger, the Hornets, Superman, all of those, who was first? Who got on that?
Let's see, well...
Or close to it.
Well, back in the 20s, before the networks, there were dramatic programs, and people were just getting up and doing Shakespeare or you know, famous plays. There were lots of plays. What radio stations tried to do, if they were on a small budget, was produce classics. In other words, things that were in the public domain.
Sure.
And so that, because then they didn't have to pay for the property.
Mm-hmm.
And then acting troupes would have shows. But then some of the shows that became very popular were shows like Suspense. There's a lot of mystery theaters that came about. Lights Out, which was a horror show.
Mm-hmm.
I've
heard a bundle of that, all Bill Cosby, of course.
Yeah, his famous Chicken Heart routine.
Yeah.
And I have the Chicken Heart, the original Chicken Heart broadcast, and it's really, actually, his routine is a lot better than the original broadcast.
I'm sure, yeah.
Even though the original is pretty good. But one point I wanted to make about the early days of radio is for this period between 1906 and when the network started in the late 20s, we had this huge era of experimentation, and we're seeing the same thing today, and we're seeing it with the internet.
Yeah, I was struck by that too.
You know, we have this new technology, and we're trying to feel our way. We don't exactly know how to use that model. We've got the technology, we know what it'll do, but what do we do with it? And we're still trying to figure that out. So I watched the development of the internet much in the same way as radio, although it happens much more rapidly today.
Mm, moving faster. Mm-hmm. Well, as a technology teacher, I was certain you'd be aware of that, and that's the next thing I want to talk about. Let's do it after a break.
Sure.
News Radio 970 KBUL. It is 1 minute now from ABC News, almost 8 o'clock, 34 degrees, blue sky in Billings. On the bulletin today, our third and final installment of radio superhero Vince Long, our technology teacher from senior high, chairman of the board at Community 7, and avid radio program collector. We're going to do When Radio Was here just a little bit after the top of the hour, so hang on.
Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
News Radio 970 AM, KBUL, and Tommy B with the Morning Bulletin. My guest, thanks again, Vince Long, technology teacher up at Senior High, radio program collector, and actually chairman of the board at Community 7 as well. You might have seen his program on Community 7. When's that air, by the way, Vince?
It airs Sunday nights at 8 o'clock, and then it's repeated a couple times on Saturday.
And it's the one with the still of the radio on there, right? And you hear the old programs.
That's right.
And have you ever repeated any of those? You just keep plugging along.
Well, I did 60... 60 weeks, and then I repeated those 60, and then I started again, and I think I'm up to show 110 now.
Really? So, that's pretty good, 110. I don't think I have that many under my belt yet. Of course, you're just playing others back. I have to start from the ground up every day.
I do. I write my intro script is about 30 seconds long, and then I'm done.
You want to trade jobs? I like the show. And I am interested in the old radio as well. Being a technology teacher, you made the point about the early days of radio from, what, the first 20 years, about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. From
20s to
1906 until the network started in 1926, 27.
Yeah, and how they kind of struggled with it and weren't sure how to, you know, I mean, we didn't have, certainly didn't have the top 40, how to even insert commercials and make it pay, which is... Well, we've heard over the last couple of years with the internet. Now, how do we make it pay? You know, and I mean, things were kind of iffy there, even till the stock market went south, and you know, 9/11, and boy, they're separating the men from the boys now, aren't they?
That's right.
As a technology teacher, and you mentioned it's moving a little faster.
The The internet.
Mm-hmm. As versus the awkwardness of early radio. So what's your best guess? Oh. When are they going to get it?
Oh, I don't know.
When's it going to happen?
Hey, if I knew the answer, I'd be out there. I'd be there.
Well, what would you like to see on the internet that they don't have? I mean, well, obviously you're into the spoken word and radio and all of that. So, I mean, in a technology teacher, you've managed to bridge almost polar opposites of technology and, you know, and be passionate about both ends, okay? I mean, you're not throwing out... Well, I guess in some ways you're not really throwing out technology, though, are you?
No,
you're using new technology to save and archive.
Well, it's just that in many things I do in the classroom and in my personal life, I always find it interesting to take old technology and combine it with new technology and see how they work together and how they complement each other. And so when I get my program for Community 7 together, I take one of the programs I have, and I've got 26 minutes and 42 seconds. I have to trim it down, so I have to trim the commercials out and that type of thing. And in the old days, old days for me, I'd be on reel-to-reel tape and either editing with two machines or getting the razor blade out. Well, now I use digital audio editing equipment, which makes it a snap. Other things, if the show is still a little too long, you can do some time compression and things like that to squeeze the content down or expand it out without changing the pitch of the program. And we can also use that technology to clean up the sound quality of some of the programs. And so there's the technology is just a tool. And so it's fun to take that tool and apply it to some of the older pieces of technology.
Sure.
Even the people who collect the radios themselves, something that I try to stay away from,
you only got so much room.
You only have so much room, and the shows take up less of it. But occasionally, I do have a few old radios, and when I want to find information on where would you find a schematic on a 1937 General Electric model radio, we go out on the internet and do that.
Uh-huh.
And there's archives of that type of information. And so,
right.
So I look at the internet itself as it'll probably be many things in the future, but the one thing it will always be is it'll be a library at our fingertips. Especially for information that you just can't find elsewhere.
Yeah, you can't trust it a lot of the time either.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
You know, as we struggle with this.
Yeah, well, but that's true of any medium.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. But I guess as a collector then, you know, as someone with 30,000 plus shows, you know, you're aware of a whole lot more of this type of world than I even knew existed. Nothing has been lost for you. I mean, you have the program. Now, I take my mom and dad, for example, my mother and father, who were the reason I know of a lot of the Jack Benny and Fibber McGee and some of the things, because they grew up with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for them to think about that now would almost be... You know, and I mean, and they're not into computers or anything, believe me. I mean, they haven't embraced the new world either. They're kind of stuck in senior citizens land there. But to them, the shows are gone. It's over. It's done with.
It's interesting you bring that up. This was the topic of a discussion in one of our online discussion groups recently. People were asking their parents who lived through that era, what shows did you listen to? And they'll remember, Jack Benny or Fibber McGee, but... That's about it. They don't remember specific shows. They don't remember that much about them. It was just something, as you say, it was in the past, it's gone, and that's it. Where those of us who are into collecting them, we study it more than as much as we listen to it.
Right.
And so people will track an actor who plays in one show, or one of the things that's interesting about radio is if one of the cast members didn't show up, someone else would cover for him, and they'd double on the show.
Okay,
and you
live.
Try to catch those things, sure. And of course, then there's the other thing is that so many of these programs were done live, and they didn't have the benefit of tape recording. And even if they used transcriptions, a lot of times that was just done live, or they would broadcast for the East Coast time and then run a transcription disc, and then they'd play the transcription disc for the West Coast time.
Wow.
So even though it was a recorded show, it was a recorded show of a live broadcast.
Right, yeah. And you mentioned the studio audience, as it were, which is still in effect today in television.
That's right.
You know, in the sitcoms and the entertainment shows.
Yeah, the performers do like to have an audience to interact with, and having an audience there. And this was true in even the dramatic shows like Lux Radio Theater, which was would dramatize a movie, a Hollywood movie, every week with 1 hour adaptation, and they'd have the stars in and all that, and you generally never heard the audience until the end when they applause. But there was a huge audience there, hundreds of people every week.
Yeah, I've seen one of those, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't think about the audience being there. That's interesting. So what do you think about the internet in terms of whether or not it, I mean, is it a great, I mean, we're, you know, emerging into satellite radio now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, being in the radio business and seeing that come and seeing them talk about it for, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years already. I've been well aware of what's happening. And now, you know, we can buy a subscription to it. And not a lot of radio people really frightened by that.
What's interesting about the internet from an end user's point of view is not only can I tune into radio stations and all over the world and listen to their signals live, so now instead of having 16 stations to listen to, I might have thousands of stations to listen
to. You're talking about on the internet now.
Sure.
Dialing in an internet station.
That's right.
Station.
And I'm a fan of Jawaian music, which is a mixture of reggae and Hawaiian, and it's popular music in Hawaii now, and I listen to several Hawaiian stations so I can hear this music, and I haven't heard it on Billings radio yet, but thanks to the internet I can keep up on what's popular in the islands. But the other piece of this is that the internet has the ability to make it's the ultimate in free speech, because we can get on there as end users and put up a website and say what we want, and also we can be radio broadcasters.
Mm-hmm.
Because through websites like there's a website where you can go to and set up your own radio station.
Sure.
And broadcast 24 hours a day, live365.com.
Wow.
That's it. And have your own program, and there's a dozen or two that play old radio 24 hours a day.
Is there?
And
yeah.
So there's what the internet has done for end users is it's given us more choice in the kind of media we access.
Well,
it's a great piece of democracy. at least it must be, because in some nations they're not real happy about it.
Well, that's true. Yeah, no, and now we would consider democratic nations for sure. I wonder how long it'll take before some of that. I mean, as we speak, Supreme Court discussing it.
That's
as a
right.
matter of fact.
That's right.
Internet broadcaster, not broadcasting, but the use of the internet and restrictions upon it, et cetera.
Right.
Gosh, I can't even imagine how one would keep track of and store 30,000 plus radio programs and have the time to listen to how many radio stations on the internet, another 80, and then all the ones in Billings. How many hours in a day do you get? Maybe I got shortchanged somehow.
Well, time management becomes an issue. One thing, I'm, with the exception of Community 7, I don't watch much television.
Okay.
And so I'll have radio on, and I am a dial spinner. Since I grew up primarily in Los Angeles, where we had 93 radio stations, and I at one time could just about recite all the call letters, and I knew the content.
Sure. And get good radio.
Yeah, there's a fantastic radio in the big cities, and there's good radio here in Billings, and that's one of the things that surprised me when we moved here 10 years ago was the quality of radio that is in Billings. It's really good. The diversity of the music that's played isn't what you would find in a major area, but the production and the talent is as good as I would hear in L.A. I'm surprised, because I thought when I moved to a smaller market that it would be like a high school operation.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's really good radio, and that's one of the things that really surprised me, and I'm a booster of radio and wish people turn off the TV and spin the dial more.
Well, you could come on every day, but not too often, because everybody else next door here will start getting big heads, and we don't, you know, we wouldn't all fit in the room. Okay. Oh, that's wonderful for you to say that. And it is a pleasure to have you here and talking. And I appreciate the things that you've brought to us to pull off our week and make everything happen. It's been wonderful. And we need to, you know, maybe get together again before too long.
Okay.
And talk about technology and you know, probably a million other things that we would have in common. So, Vince Long,